Welcome to the press conference for Robin Hood, which is the film that opens. If someone asks a question in French, yes, by all means, unless you understand French. And allow me to introduce the people who are here at this panel. Most of them are honorary citizens of Cannes. One of them is a rookie. I'll start with the rookie, Mr. Charlie Schlissel, who's a producer. Sitting next to him, Mr. Brian Grazer, of course. Next to him, as Lady Marion, Miss Kate Blanchett. Next to Miss Blanchett, as Robin Hood, Mr. Russell Crowe. One key player is missing, and that's the director, Sir Ridley Scott. He could not. His first film, The Duelist, was shown in Cannes competition. Thelma and Louise closed the festival. Robin Hood is opening the festival. He was there the first two times. He couldn't be here this time, but he sent a message that I'm going to read to you. It is with the most sincere regret that I am required to miss the opening night of the Cannes Film Festival and the screening of Robin Hood. I recently underwent knee replacement surgery, and my recovery has been slower than I'd hoped. Truly, doctor's orders are the only thing that could keep me from being there. My disappointment is tempered by the fact that Brian, Russell, Kate, and the rest of the cast will be on hand to represent the film. I send them all my best wishes in opening this year's festival with our film.
And so, Ridley would like to throw an open challenge out to Roger Federer. And in December, the challenge is, Federer, beware. He's coming back.
Good. I'll throw the first question to you, Mr. Crowe. This is the first time since 2002, and probably the second time in your entire career, that you are credited as producer. The first time was in 2002, if I am to trust IMDb, with a film called Texas. Why did you decide to enroll here as a producer? What did it imply for you, and how did you coalesce with the other two?
Well, I've made four movies now with Brian, and we work very well together, and it's always an enjoyable experience. But it's not a decision to become a producer on this. It was something that came from the studio, and quite frankly, the simple thing is that the studio just needed somebody else to blame.
We have a question here, then here.
Swimmingly so far. It's probably a good idea if we're talking.
Who has the mic over there?
Shouldn't be waving around.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Un micro là. Allez-y. Go ahead.
This is so well organized.
Go ahead.
Charlotte Higgins from The Guardian. This is a very interesting film to see as a British person today, inasmuch as we've just had a regime change. The old guard is out, the new guard is in, promising higher taxes and a period of austerity to pay for overseas wars. I would like to ask you what contemporary resonances you might see in this film. A question for Mr. Crowe and Ms. Blanchett. Thank you.
My answer would be, I think you've said it all. Really. I think it's true, and it's sort of an irony. That this is all going on and the film's being released today. But I think it's a testament to Ridley's talent as a director that all of those things are there for the taking, but it's also a wild ride. And, of course, the bit that I'm interested in, the love story, it also plays. And so he's able to tonally weave all those different elements into the film.
Mr. Crowe?
That'll do.
Okay. Anyone wants to come in? Brian?
No, I think it's been covered.
Okay. A question way over there. Go ahead.
This is actually a question for Brian. I just wanted to ask, is like you get all these scripts all the time, and I'm just wondering what's your choice in choosing the kind of movies you want to do, and also what is it about this film in particular that you wanted to work with Ridley and Russell?
Well, the way I choose projects are based on, often they're based on a world. And if the world is interesting to me and can sustain my interest over a period of years, then I often make the movie. But I do have to find inner themes that are at the core of it. This was a project that was submitted to me as a script through Russell, and I just wanted to be really part of supporting Russell's vision. And then, of course, Ridley. I just finished working with Ridley on American Gangster, and that was a great success for the three of us. And I'd also worked with Kate, so we were very fortunate that all of us got a chance to work together again.
Question here, question there. Sir?
Hello, Hugues Daillé, Belgian TV. Very pleased to meet you here in Cannes. It's a question for Russell. Was it clear immediately you want to do a kind of prequel of the legend, and you want to tell how Robin Hood became Robin Hood? This point of view was very clear immediately?
No, it wasn't. What was clear to me, what was an instinctive positive thing, Brian came into my trailer while we were making American Gangster, and he often will ask you a question in a sort of a slightly timid way when he's mulling it over in his own mind, and the question was, do you really think it's time to remake Robin Hood? And I had a surprisingly absolute positive response. It was like, yeah, okay, yeah, that's what I want to do. Yes, yes, let's do that. And then we started talking about doing it with Ridley. And when it was underway, you know, Ridley went off to his corner and I went off to my corner, and we both sort of researched the subject matter. We came back together and we discussed what we would feel the plot might be. And that discussion, after that discussion, it was sort of what we had in mind was about a 7.5-hour movie.
The Mahabharata.
Yeah, so that wasn't going to work. You've got two clear choices at that point. You can either truncate the vision, which is not going to ever work for a filmmaker like Ridley Scott, or you can just start at the beginning and see how you go and find a natural breakpoint. And that's what we decided to do. There isn't a Robin Hood that has been done, which gives me a satisfying feeling that I know the motivations of the individual. And so that's what we attempted to do. But, you know, these things, you know, there's many, many hours of discussion before you come to the fact, well, we better start at the beginning of the story and see how we go. So, no, it wasn't an original, it wasn't an initial concept, but it was something that developed over time.
Can I ask you a question? Mm. Quote, something I haven't asked you before. Is there any truth to the rumour that, you know, as these things unfold, that you were going to play both Robin Hood and Sheriff of Nottingham?
No. See, what happened is we were doing press conferences.
I've heard.
Yeah.
I read that.
No, but you'll understand what happened, because we are in between the idea of making the movie and actually making the movie. Ridley and I made two other movies, and we had to go and do conversations with journalists about them, you know. So one of the core parts of Robin Hood is disguise and deception. Quite often, through the ballads of Robin Hood and through the many retellings of Robin Hood, Robin will take on another persona at a certain point in order for something in the narrative to move forward. And what we were trying to do, right, is explain to people that at certain points, Robin becomes another person. And that was turned into, oh, he's playing multiple roles. Right, so it's like Jeremy Irons in that other movie. No, it's not. But for those of you, when you get to see the film, it's kind of quite clear what happens, you know. We took a very arrogant perspective on this, which I believe you have to if you're going to retell a story that's been told for 1,000 years.
And hell, we're Australian, so...
We took the perspective that whatever you think you know about Robin Hood is a previously understandable mistake.
Question here, then the lady here, then Mr. Kirkland there. Sir.
Mounir Benali pour Beur FM Radio. J'ai une question pour vous, Monsieur Cro. S'il existe un Robin des Bois aujourd'hui, lequel serait-il selon vous?
Lequel serait-il de quel point de vue?
D'un point de vue actuel, s'il y avait un Robin des Bois aujourd'hui, lequel serait-il selon
vous? If there were Robin Hood today, who or what would he be, Mr. Crow?
A funny thing about Robin Hood is, I think, strangely, there's an element of Robin Hood lying in the heart of all of us, in that if our world was to go completely pear-shaped, we would hope that somebody would stand up and try and redress the balance. You know, I'm not sure. You know, people say, have been asking me this question a lot, obviously, because I've been doing the press for it, and they've been asking me, like, would Robin Hood's aim be political? Would he aim at certain figures and try and bring them down? Would his aim be economic? Would he be looking at Wall Street and the huge sums of money that people have been patting themselves on the back with, you know, and the subprime mortgage collapse and all that? Or would he be looking at what you guys do for a living and realising that the true wealth lies in the dissemination of information. And my theory would be, if Robin Hood was alive today, he would be looking at the monopolization of media as the greatest enemy. Bonjour.
Oui. Man, Mr. Kirkland, and then the lady here. And then the lady there.
My name is Daphne. I'm from Dutch television, VPRO. I have a question for Mrs. Blanchett. I admire the way that you transform so easily through all those styles and types of films. And I was wondering what this film in particular and the role of Marianne offered you as an actress.
Mud. I used a lot of mud. I'd usually come down to set relatively clean and Ridley would pick something off the ground and smear it on me. Is a fetish or I'm not quite sure. What was the question?
It wasn't really a question. It was more of a series of compliments.
What has Rob offered you as an actress?
Look, it's also I think at a certain point in one's career, it's not just necessarily obviously the chance to work with Ridley and Russell, as a duo. And a lot of my scenes were with Max von Sydow, who's long been a hero of mine. But then you sort of have to say, well, what does it offer my family? And I think it was probably one of the greatest summers of my two elder sons' lives, you know. So, yeah.
And there's the whole getting to kiss Kate thing as well.
Oh, yes, and I got to kiss Russell. Sorry, I practiced that line and I just forgot to say it. Sorry.
Sir, and then the lady and then the gentleman. Yes, go ahead.
Yes, Bruce Kirkland from the Toronto Sun. Question for
Bruce,
Russell.
How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Haven't seen you for a long time.
I know.
Yeah.
So I haven't been stalking you, so there you go.
Who have you been stalking, Bruce? Because I know you haven't stopped.
I'm just disseminating information, as always, but trying not to do it through a monopoly. But I work for a monopoly, so there you go. So life is a paradox. But nevertheless, looping this back to Robin Hood, one of the things that grows out of the answers you've already given to the other questions is touching upon historical reality. And anybody who looks to films for actual specific history is maybe sadly mistaken, yes. However, it seems that in Gladiator and in this film, there's been an attempt to try to create the feeling or the look or the mud, the dirt, the lack of romanticism in war, all of those elements. And I'm curious how you feel about putting historical reality into what is also an historical fiction.
Well, what you have to do is you have to do enough to pique people's curiosity, you know? And that's what Gladiator did. There was just enough accurate history in there that felt real, that felt visceral, and it encouraged people to go and, you know, follow their own curiosity and answer questions for themselves. And I believe that Robin Hood will do the same thing. The people will look into the reign of King Richard. They'll look into the reign of King John. You know, the main shift that we made, which is a kind of a, you know, if you want, a revolutionary shift within the oeuvre of Robin Hood, is that King Richard the Lionheart, who rides in most Robin Hoods and saves the day, we kill him in the first scene. We get rid of King Richard. And that signals to anybody who's a fan of previous Robin Hoods that it's a different game and it's shifted and changed. What piqued my own curiosity is this indolent egoist who is King John, who is written in that way. He ends up signing the first version of the Magna Carta before the end of his reign. How did that shift happen? What pressure was applied to King John in that 15-year period or 16-year period that brought him from the indolent egoist to the man who champions the rights of other people? That, to me, is the fertile ground where a resistance fighter, a rebel hero, could rise. And that's what we tried to do with this movie. Find a place where that rebel hero could rise and apply pressure to a monarch.
Through the love of a good woman.
Actually, in the open air and in forests and using trees as a sort of cover. I don't know where that was going. Anyway, so, yeah, you can pretend that or say that, you know, we're standing under a banner saying historical accuracy, but we're not. We're actually just doing a version of the history, and hopefully people's own curiosity is piqued and they discover things for themselves after that.
Question here, then there.
Hi, this is Carol Guerrero from W Radio in Colombia, and my question is to Mr. Russell Crowe. We have seen many times Robin Hood on cinema, so I would like to know how difficult was for you to show the same story, but in a very original way. And I'd also like to know if you had any special training to play Robin Hood, physical training to play Robin Hood. Thanks.
I think Kate should answer that.
What physical training did you have? Ballet, yoga, mm-hmm. meditation.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Accurate enough.
And the first question?
Gee whiz. There are so many Robin Hoods being, that have been made. I'm just having a strange moment because I'm not sure if I'd have already said this about 5 minutes ago. Or maybe it was outside, or maybe it was yesterday, or maybe it was the day before, in some other country in a different language. I'm just having one of those moments where I'm not sure if I'm repeating myself. There are so many Robin Hoods made, okay? But personally, I don't feel that there is one that is satisfactory in terms of its human element. Do I really believe in the motivations and the backstory of any of the other Robin Hoods that have been done? And when I started thinking about it from that perspective, my answer was no. I wanted to find out what the essential motivations were for this man's altruism. You know, we have a character who, in a time where your average Englishman travels no more than 14 miles from his place of birth, we have a man who's actually marched from Palestine, from the south of France to Palestine and back. So he's experienced all the great empires of his time. He's seen the church's control in Italy. He's seen democracy at work in Greece. He has seen the great empires of the Middle East. And he comes back to his own country, and it is the most impoverished. It is the place where people don't have the right to actually look after themselves. So that, to me, is a great way of beginning the story, you know, putting a man who is worldly into that impoverished country and then giving him two clear motivations. He meets a chick and he wants her to fall in love with him. He finds out something about his father's history and he wants to protect the legacy of his dad. They are very clear motivations that are easily understood by everybody.
And I don't mean to be glib, but I think it's really important. You have to deal with the green tights. And I think you've got, you know, that's a big challenge, I think. And when Janti Yates, who obviously made togas work in Gladiator, is doing it.
That was a netball skirt I was wearing Gladiator.
Was it? Yeah. Have you still got it?
Just above
I'd
the
like
knee.
To see that.
Well, you know, I've worn it for you before, Kate.
But I think it's really important to find the aesthetic. And so Arthur Max, who did the production design, was extraordinary. And Janti Yates' costumes are, well, just take a look at Russell's leather pants. They're pretty fetching.
Question there, then there, then there.
Peter Paul Hoot, German television. A question to Mr. Crowe and Miss Blanchett. Talking about the leather outfit, there was one scene which impressed me most, was my favorite scene, when the character of Lady Marian has to undress Robin Hood because he can't do it himself. Nowadays, it's the other way around. What was it like to do this scene, and why was it so important?
I think you have to answer that, Russell. We talked about...
I think it's really a question for Brian.
In movie terms, it just seemed like the easiest way to create romance.
It was one of the things that I kept talking to Ridley about. It's like the amount of time it takes to get the chainmail on. And it was sort of... I just said, let's manufacture a way where you see that. You know, you go through the function... of that, you know.
That was in the 7-hour version.
But the full removal. It actually just came up, mm-hmm. came up, and so we used it as a way of bringing Marian across a barrier that she would never cross. You know, it's a sort of a in the times, it would be like an impossibility for that time. But when it's a practical, simple thing, he cannot undress without somebody to help him. And it just puts Marion into a very intimate moment with somebody that she otherwise wouldn't have that situation with.
The lady there, then the gentleman over there, then Brian.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead. Go ahead. All right. Go ahead. Who has it? Okay, go ahead.
Sorry, sir. James Rocky, MSN Movies. My question's for Mr. Grazer. Obviously, it's an honor to be asked to open the Cannes Film Festival. Did you have a moment of trepidation recognizing you were opening the Cannes Film Festival with a film wherein the French are the bad guys? Did that feel a little awkward for a moment?
Thank you. I think the English come off worse than the French, to be honest.
I think they do, too, actually. I think they're both have... kind of equal qualities of uncomfortable nature. So I think, you know, we were thrilled to be invited to open the Cannes Film Festival. We're somewhat aware that there's a political nature to it, but really this is the story of Robin and Marion. So it was along that narrative.
Go ahead.
The thing is, you know, if you think in terms of the history of American-financed motion pictures, to have so much French language in this movie and so many diverse French characters, and to also to tell the one simple truth that Richard Coeur de Lion did not make it home to England. So many Robin Hoods have that. To tell the simple truth that this grand English hero, he was snuffed out by a crossbow bolt shot by a French cook. I think that is an important piece of history, and I think that's probably why we're opening the Cannes Film Festival.
Very good. Madam, sir?
Hello. Hello, bonjour. Bonjour, Monsieur Crow. Helen Barlow from Australia.
Hello, Helen. How are you, loving?
G'day, mate. How you going? I want to know about the Rabbitohs and how much you... are a frustrated footballer, in that when you kind of play the muscular scenes, and especially when you take your shirt off, you look like you've been working out with the boys. You look like you could be as happy on a football field as in an action scene in a movie. I just wonder about that. An actor of the cast just said that they did think you were a frustrated football player, by the way, but they didn't want to be named. So, and is it how much...
Was it Helen Barlow?
No, it was not. It was not.
It was, wasn't it?
It was a cast. It was a cast member just said that to me.
It wasn't me.
And it wasn't Kate.
No, I'm not frustrated anything, really. I'm very relaxed in my life.
No, but just in terms of when you worked out, did you work out in... You look like a footballer at your physique this time rather than a movie star physique. I just wondered if you worked out with him.
Really, funnily enough, I was going for a 12th century warrior. So if I've made it football player, gosh, I missed the mark.
But, OK, is it like being a gladiator in this role? Could you see the similarity between the two roles? And I find that a footballer is a bit like a gladiator too.
I would agree with you on that, current high-level professional football players have the same position in this society that gladiators had in their day. The rest of it I'm just walking away from. Next.
Okay. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Rodrigo from Globo Brasil. Two questions to Mr. Crow, please. The first one, I would like to know if you used the Errol Flynn films, the Robin Hood films, as a reference somehow, if you are close to the films he did as Robin Hood. And the second question, if you could say a few words about your experience working with Max von Sydow.
With Mark Strong?
Max von Sydow.
Okay, so growing up, I saw all the Robin Hoods. I saw, you know... Errol's, obviously, Richard Todd, the Richard Green TV series, the Mel Brooks TV series in the 70s when things were rotten, obviously the Costner one, the Patrick Bergen, and then Men in Tights, and also Douglas Fairbanks, obviously. So for me, you know, Robin Hood was just a simple part of growing up, so... working with Max was fantastic. I've always felt, you know, from a long time ago, I was working in a city called Adelaide in Australia, and they were in post-production on a film called Father that Max was the star of. And so for some strange reason, I've always felt this affinity with him because, you know, I was able to see that work, and I don't know why, but getting to actually work with him and be with him on a daily basis was a fantastic experience. In terms of performance, I've always felt that he was like somebody that I referenced and somebody whose work I was always impressed with. So to get a chance to actually form a friendship and form a working relationship was a great privilege.
Extending the question, the comparison to previous incarnations of one character, Miss Blanchett, what is your take on the previous Marianne's, from Olivia de Havilland to Audrey Hepburn?
To be honest, I mean, Olivia de Havilland is a great beauty, but I always wanted to be Robin Hood rather than Maid Marian, but the part was...
That was exactly the same on this movie. Every day.
Yep.
Give us your leather trousers, Russell, she'd say.
I was put back in my box. they're not the ones I remembered, to be honest, which was probably convenient because Ridley wasn't at all interested in, you know, the maiden in distress, so...
Okay. Question there.
Hi, Brian Johnson from Maclean's Magazine in Canada. A question for Cate Blanchett and for Russell Crowe. This film certainly seems to set up the possibility of a franchise. Two questions. First of all, can an old-fashioned sort of storybook franchise like this survive in a world of comic book superheroes? And secondly, how long do both of you think you could maintain this kind of long-term relationship if such a franchise, and is such a thing in the offing?
There's no sort of cynicism with this. We don't have two other scripts under Ridley's hospital bed. You know, as I said before, you know, when we talked about in terms of history what we wanted to see, what we liked and disliked on other Robin Hoods, what we thought that we should bring to the movie, it was a 7.5-hour film. We've told the first couple of hours, you know, obviously there's a figure in the studio head's mind. If we pass a certain figure, then they'll, you know, give us a call and say, we'll tell us a second part of the story. But there's no grand plan in that regard, you know. If we do get the opportunity to do it again, and look, quite frankly, being on a film of this size, directed by Ridley Scott, is an absolute pleasure for me, you know. It's theatre on a grand scale, and it's an experience second to none, you know. And if I had the opportunity to redress what happens next, or address what happens next with Ridley and with Cate, then great, let's do it. I think the cool thing about the relationship between Robin and Marian is it's a very adult love affair, you know. They come to each other slowly, and I think there's lots of variations on that theme that we could continue on with. And as I was alluding to before, we still haven't seen the love scene in the forest, you know, with the dappled light coming through the trees. You want a mud, Cate? I'll give you mud. Come on, try and talk now.
Me? I haven't been asked yet.
Question there.
Right. Hi, it's Frank Johnson from Norway. Just a question for Cate. You just had a great theatre run with A Streetcar Named Desire. How was it to work with Liv, and have you talked about doing more together, maybe a film, or...?
Oh, I'd love to work with Liv again. It was extraordinary. She's a truth-seeking missile, and she created an extraordinary atmosphere in the rehearsal room. And I think the most overwhelmingly wonderful response that we had to the production was the ensemble, the production as a whole. And it was great to take it back to America. Daunting, a bit like we have an expression in Australia, taking Coles to Newcastle, taking a great American classic back to America. But it was a really rewarding experience.
Ma'am, then there's in there.
Hi, my name's Nadia. I'm from South Africa. Russell, you just recently met Real Madrid. Any plans on popping in for the World Cup? And Cate Blanchett, how heavy was that chainmail to wear, and in terms of your physical preparation for the film?
I actually did meet the players from Real Madrid. It was a slightly embarrassing situation because in La Liga I'm a Barcelona fan. And I didn't hesitate to tell them, each individual, hi, mate, how are you? Yeah, actually, I go for Barcelona. Yeah, nice to meet you. But it was, you know, a great privilege going there. Obviously, because part of my life outside cinema, I have a sports team, so looking at the facilities of other great organisations is always interesting. I'm not going to go to South Africa for the World Cup, unfortunately, but you know, it's one of those places. Have you been? No, because it's just, I can't work out why we don't do press in South Africa for movie openings and premieres and everything. Brian, work on that, please.
I've actually done press in South Africa. It's
you
a
have?
Great place to work, yeah.
Huh.
In fact, what brought me to South Africa is I did a press junket, and there was a big, heavy man named Roger and said, I love my country so much, you have to come to it. You have to visit my country. And so it was about a week later, and I was in New York, and I called up Roger, and I said, you know, I think I will come. And I went to South Africa, met him in Johannesburg, and he took me throughout the country. So it is a beautiful place. It's a place that should be paid attention to as an international spot for movies.
Really looking forward to the World Cup. In case you've got other burning questions, I believe, in my mind, having a look around, that maybe Spain, you know, maybe Brazil. Portugal has a great opportunity if Cristiano Ronaldo is on form. England always come up with a good team, but, you know, there may be a defence issue there, maybe a goalie issue, maybe Wayne Rooney, who's going to partner him up front, you know. Beckham's injured, of course, so he'll be sitting it out. And, of course, really, they have no chance against a resurgent Australian team, which is probably going to start dominating world football from now on, and you'll all learn that.
We'll take the last few questions over there and then here. Go ahead.
I need the simultaneous translation when you start talking.
I think she asked you a question about your physical preparation. And
that's true.
Oh, the chainmail was plastic.
Go ahead.
Ben Hoyle from the Times. You talked about the creating the feel of kind of historical authenticity, but the values of some of the characters are very contemporary. The feisty female Marion, but also Robin's concern for the Muslims massacred in Acre. I wonder if you could tell us a bit about projecting those values back onto the past, and whether this is a PC Robin Hood.
Well, I think you're making some sort of grand assumptions there. You're making a huge assumption that they're, you know, at the time we're talking about, the people had no empathy. And I think that's incorrect. At Robin's core is a simple thing. He is distressed by the unnecessary suffering of other human beings. And I don't think that is simply a contemporary thought process. I think that is an age-old thought process. And the more that every individual has that thought process within them, the better off the world is, quite frankly.
Question there, and then over there.
Hi, I'm Maria João Rosa from Portuguese TVI. First of all, you've met the Real Madrid players. How was it to be with the Portuguese football stars, Cristiano Ronaldo and Pepe?
Oh, come on, kiddo.
And how much of the film history, how much of the film plot is actually inspired in historic information?
So, Cristiano Ronaldo is a really nice chap. Really. I was very pleased to meet him. I mean, he's probably one of the, you know, in the handful of greatest players to ever play the game. So, you know, as we know, Portugal has a relatively good chance in the World Cup coming up. But we went through that. In terms of historical accuracy in the movie, it's the template that we were looking at was what is the ground where a resistance fighter, a revolutionary hero, where he would rise to apply pressure to a monarch. And as I was discussing earlier, the indolent egoist King John ends up signing the document, which is the beginning of the rights of man. It has affected the Declaration of Independence all the way through. So how did that happen? So, you know, the rest of it, pretty much, apart from the year and a couple of names, we made it all up.
Question over there.
Hello, Anne Hornaday from the Washington Post. This is a question for Brian. Brian?
Yes?
Over here.
Over there.
Could you talk a little bit about the importance of the Cannes Film Festival in terms of launching a movie like this, and also your past projects at Cannes, and the importance of the festival and sort of the morphology of a movie?
Well, I've been to the Cannes Film Festival many different times with different types of movies. I've been here, controversial moments like The Da Vinci Code. I did very well, but. It's important to go. I came here also with The Changeling, with Clint Eastwood and Angelina Jolie. It was a great privilege. The festival loves Clint. And smaller movies, one called Fear, one was called with John Waters' film with Johnny Depp. So I've had a variety of different films here. And it's very important, actually. It's you have an opportunity to capture the whole world's attention in a single moment. So it's...
What? Oh, he's being rude.
Oh, well, first time?
Second.
Okay. So it's... we were thrilled to be selected, and we feel it's a prestigious honor to have that happen. And it's very important to be part of the festival. So,
on that note, I'm afraid our time is up. Thank you all for being here. Have a good day.